Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the Athletic Soccer Show. This is your World Cup post game. My name is Jack Collins and I'm delighted to be joined by two of the Athletic's finest today. Mr. Peter Rust, how you doing, mate?
Hello, mate. Yeah, not too bad. Glad to be here. It's been another good day of World Cup action, so I'm happy.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, Mr. Rich Amofo. It's been a little while since the preview show. Rich, how you doing?
I'm all good, thank you. I'm all good. Yeah, really good to be here with you guys.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. Four cracking games to talk about. We're going to start with Spain, Germany. We'll go through, obviously, Japan, Costa Rica. The shock of Belgium losing to Morocco 2-0. And, of course, that Croatia-Canada game as well. But we'll start with Spain, Germany. 1-1, Peter. But I think maybe one of the better games we've seen in terms of technical quality across this entire tournament. It was two very high-level teams for long spells of this game.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Technically and tactically, probably the best game we've seen, actually, in that sense. Two very high-quality sides, as you say, set up in a very intriguing way, the way Germany set up to try and stop the Spanish midfield, to make it difficult, to make it a little bit more stop-start. And I thought they were pretty good at that in the main. Didn't really see the same amount of Spanish quality consistently that we have done, or we did against Costa Rica, those wave after wave of attacks. But it was a really finely balanced game. Two teams that both lacked a number nine, threw on a number nine and found the back of the net. And I think Germany would be pleased with the point. I think the result earlier in the day sort of changed probably the mentality and probably made it the technical and tactical game that it was, because there's less emotion in it. Of course, it's massive. You know, if Germany lose it, then their fate's not in their hands anymore. But it just added a sense of control. We know that we want to win. We need to win, but a point isn't a complete disaster. And an enjoyable game in the end. It sort of opened up towards the end, but I think both sides will take a point.
Yeah, they'll run with it, I think, is probably the right phrase I would go for. Anyway, Rich, what did you make of Germany? Because actually, we saw them in the first half against Japan. They looked pretty sharp, and there were some nice tilts down that left-hand side to get David Raum in behind. There were some really nice moments, I thought, generally, from a kind of across the whole German perspective. Then, obviously, with the two Japanese goals in the second half, that all kind of gets forgotten in the kind of melee of the loss. But actually, there was a lot here in the first half that I was like, okay, we're back to this kind of amount of technical quality. We're seeing these moments. And also that press that really did kind of squeeze the life out of Spain a little bit more than we were used to.
Yeah, that was the first thing I was going to say, really. I think, I mean, like as Pete said, you know, we were crying out for a number nine, but at the same time, I guess before, you know, the number nine did come on, you know, they were pressing really, really well. They're a really cohesive unit. And there was an element of control in their game, you know, the likes of Gundogan and the likes of Kimmich really, really controlling the game just with their technical quality. As you mentioned, you know, the likes of Raum at left back and, you know, really, really pushing forward as well. You know, you're looking at a side who, let's say, I guess from, you know, the last, the goals they conceded against Japan, you know, very uncharacteristic of them, those kind of lapses of concentration. There was a side that I saw anyway, which, you know, a side which did kind of, you know, control games, was happy to, you know, control possession, control, you know, especially, you know, the middle of the pitch as well. And we saw that against Spain today. You know, they did press the life out of them, and they for last parts of the game anyway, I'd say that they were the better side. And it was just a case of putting the ball in the back of the net. And as you say, once the strikers came on, they did look a bit more threatening going forward. But in terms of the control element of things, I think they've done really well so far. It's just having that cutting edge. And I think it was really towards the last 15, 20 minutes, I guess, when they were chasing the goal, we did see that kind of that cutting edge at the top end of the pitch.
Yeah, agreed. Someone who had a bit of a mare, Peter, on Tuesday? Their days are all starting to roll into one at this point. Against Japan, shall we say, was Nicolas Sula. Obviously at fault, especially for that second Japanese goal, but didn't cover himself in glory from right back at kind of any point. Moved into centre-back today, and I thought was excellent. Really did deal with the Spanish attack well and got himself in the way of things in a far more obvious manner than perhaps he'd done at right back. That feels like the move that they're going to have to stick with.
I think so. I think, you know, it suited in the way they played. I thought Germany dealt with the movement of Asensio really well, particularly with Olmo coming in. I think they had a little bit more trouble on that side than they did anywhere else behind Thilo Kehrer. But of course, right back is an issue for Germany, and you've got to find your solutions. But I do think that Sula was solid. I think he's much more comfortable in that position. Of course, he would be. It is his natural position. I think it helped that, again, it sort of comes back to the mentality coming into the game where they didn't have, there wasn't that same urgency and desperation to win, that they could be a bit more controlled and a bit more conservative in the way that the fullbacks played. I thought Ram was a little bit deeper than he was against Japan, or much deeper than he was against Japan. And I think that was just to cover those movements from Torres ducking and fielding, and Gavi in particular on that right side of midfield. He just didn't really have the same influence in forward areas that we know he can do. And I think that's down to the way Germany set up. And then when you have the midfield going man for man and pressing and harrying and winning fouls and being smart, you know, it was an old team. I think I saw a stat that popped up that said that it was the oldest team Germany had played in the World Cup since they finished runner-up to Brazil in the final in 2002. So you could see that experience.
That worked all right, as you say.
Yes. Yeah, and it made a difference on the day, and you needed that now, so that way to manage a game against a technically really strong Spanish team.
Yeah, okay. I mean, Rich, we talked about the number nines, and I feel like it's time to come on to them. It felt like Lucho made that decision early doors in the second half. He's, you know, 7-8 minutes in, he's gone, right, this isn't working, we're sticking Morata in. And he got his just rewards from being brave and making that call, because there'd been a couple of moments where the ball had skidded across the front post and there was no one attacking it, and that's the way obviously Morata gets his goal. There's also the element that then Hansi Flick goes, right, we need a goal now, I'm going to chuck on Niklas Füllkrug. Now this, I think, was probably slightly more of a gamble. Morata's right up in the Spanish top scorers ever in terms of the national team. Füllkrug, this was his third cap, so it was a bit more of a gamble in that regard, and it's someone who probably wouldn't be in the squad, as they say, if Timo Werner was fit. But with all that said, he came on and made a real difference, as I think he did against Japan. You know, this is a player who can cause havoc, can hassle, can harry in the opposition box, and Spain didn't really know what to do with him.
No, you know, this is a guy who's, I guess, he's coming to the tournament in decent form. You know, 10 goals in 16 games in all competitions, and you know, he puts himself about. You know, he's big, he's strong, you know, he's willing to make those runs in behind as well. And I think that's also important, because it's all well and good having, you know, lovely technical players come into feet and combining, and it looks great at times. But you know, sometimes you do need that number nine who's going to occupy both centre backs, try and get in behind and you know, try and cause problems and create chances for himself. And you saw with the goal, okay, fantastic run for Musiala to kind of that outset in run, which he did, I think he did initially for Musiala's chance earlier in the half.
Yeah.
And as you say, Füllkrug was there this time to pounce and I guess show Musiala how it was done, really. I mean, it was a fantastic finish. Someone who put his foot through the ball like he had a point to prove. And, you know, he really did, you know, it was a fantastic strike. And on Morata as well, when you look at his goal, you see when Jordi Alba has the ball, you know Morata's going to make that run across the centre-back. It's just a matter of getting the timing right, getting the ball right. And it was a great ball. I know we spoke about Sula and how impressive he was, but I guess, you know, from a centre-back perspective, you know he's going to make that run across you. So you want to get your body there. But like on the flip side, Morata is, you know, it's been at the top level for a number of years now. His timing of his movement is fantastic, and he got it right there. And it was a fantastic finish. And it just goes to show that when you do have that number nine there, who's a, you know, a clinical finisher, like both of them are, they both, you know, went on to prove the difference today.
Yeah, yeah, and I wonder how much of that is going to filter into their coaches' thinking. I've got a funny feeling that it filters into Flick's thinking more than it does Lucho, as Lucho backs himself, backs his ability, and I've just got a sneaky that Morata might end up being one of those players. Remember when Fernando Torres won the Golden Boot in Euro 2012, and I think he started one game, seven. I've got a sneaky about Morata starting like no games and still winning the Golden Boot, but just coming on against tired legs and giving the runaround. Peter, last one on this. Should Germany have won it? Leroy Sané slipped through in the last, the dying second, shall we say, and won a corner. There seems to be quite like a general consensus that winning a corner was a good thing. I was like, I think he should probably score.
I mean, you know, I'll sympathise as a fellow lefty. You don't want to be using your right foot in that situation. You want to get it onto your left as much as you can. I can understand why he's done that. But yeah, probably he should have done. But I mean, there's that the rust element, isn't there, with him coming onto the field. And to be honest, even with set plays, I feel like we saw that with the goal that Germany scored that was ruled out. Spain clearly trying to avoid what could be a weakness in terms of, you know, their height. They don't really have the defensive strength in that area, particularly against a tall German team. You know, there was an opportunity there to take advantage of set plays, which I don't think Germany did. I don't think their delivery was particularly good at all. I'm intrigued by their high line. I'm really intrigued to see how this plays out. You see Germany trying to adapt to it as the game went on by starting their runs from deep. It still didn't work. It'll be interesting to see how that pans out. But maybe there was a reason to go, yeah, a corner's a good idea because everyone sort of thinks they might score from it, but ultimately didn't.
Yeah, I mean, the transitions and those overloads down the flank started to work a little bit for Germany. Mm. So I can understand how they were trying to get it. I also liked Unai Simon basically doing a Manuel Neuer impression for most of this game, like spending half the time halfway up the pitch, making clearances. It was a real good little nod to his predecessor there at the other end as the original sweeper keeper. But with that, let's come on to the other game in this group where we saw the first shock of the day, Japan losing 1-0 to Costa Rica. It wouldn't be the last shock we see, Rich. But a funny old game, this. Obviously, Costa Rica scored with their only shot on target, their first shot of the entire tournament so far. But they're on 3 points, and you know, they have a shot of going through, which seems a bit mad to, you know, to be discussing in terms of how badly they played in the first game. They weren't great here for long periods, and yet 3 points up, Costa Rica are in the mixer.
This is football for you. I mean, the longer that they stayed in the game, there was always that inkling that, okay, if they just get one chance, you never know. Almost similar to Japan, I guess, the other day. But the more and more Japan were wasteful in their chances and wasteful in their possession high up the pitch, you could just see Costa Rica getting that confidence. And he's almost had that belief in them, as if to say, okay, if we do get this one chance, we have to take it. We're going to take it. We're going to make the most of it. And fair enough, the goalkeeper should have saved it. But, you know, it was a decent strike. And as you say, they're right in the thick of it now, whether they deserve it or not. They were the ones who remained dogged throughout the game. Japan were wasteful, of course, but they stayed in the game and they took their chance when it came, and now they're right in it.
Tournament football for you in its finest form. Peter, Japan were wasteful, which is just is absolutely spot on. Not necessarily in terms of clear-cut chances being spurned, just kind of sloppiness in the final third, I thought, was what really cost them here. And there was none of the real that drive and desire that we saw in that first game or in the second half against Germany, where they were looking to take on players. It wasn't really until Matoma came on that Japan started to make things click in that final third. And you do wonder about all the changes that were made here by Moriyasu. You know, has he underestimated Costa Rica, or were these changes that he wanted to do in order to get some of this squad a game at the World Cup? We saw how that worked for Mancini at the Euros with Italy. He made sure that everybody got some minutes somewhere. And in terms of squad harmony, that was great. But I think he might have just overcooked the broth a little bit with this one.
Yeah, and there was also the element that his changes against Germany changed the game, didn't it? You know, that swung the game in their favour, and that tactical change. And he did the same here, really, didn't he? Switching to another back three, really, to try and pin Costa Rica back. But I completely agree with the point about being wasteful, but wasteful in possession. You know, they really weren't, particularly in the first half. It was one of those games that they were so bad at it, you sort of switch off from watching it, because, you know, they go into the front man and they just weren't holding the ball up well enough at all. And when you're doing that, you lose momentum, you lose rhythm. And when you've already got that sort of sense, having, you know, achieved such a fantastic result against Germany, there is that fear of the after the Lord Mayor show, where, you know, you've done the big thing and this one should just be a procession. And then suddenly it turns out Costa Rica are in a 5-4-1 formation and they're being really dogged and difficult to break down. And it can get to you. And, you know, those changes at halftime, it was almost like we're trying to repeat the trick, which wasn't necessarily the case in the end. And I do agree that Mitoma made an impact, and maybe that rotation, as much as, you know, you want to give everyone games, you want to get more games so you can give more opportunities, I suppose, and spread them out a little bit. But it felt a bit disruptive. And they lacked that quality in the final third. And sure, I mean, Costa Rica, you know, it's a great finish in the end from Fuller. I mean, the positioning of Gonda in goal is not great. I mean, that was a difference, really, in one respect, because Keylor Navas makes a really important stop at the other end, at the death from Kamada, I think. Those can be the fine margins in games like this. But it's really disappointing for Japan, because to have the result against Germany and then to go into the Costa Rica game can really put pressure on Germany, change the complexion of that final game in the evening. It's, you know, it was set up for them. So, and now it's completely wide open, and it, you know, it's such a difficult final game. And in a group that we thought would be a procession, you know, it hasn't turned out to be the case, but it could have been very, very different. So really disappointing from Japan, especially considering how well they played against Germany.
Yeah, I mean, Rich, that was going to be my question. Have they blown it in terms of a chance? Because obviously they're coming to this final game against Spain. They'll know that a win sends them through. A draw might not be enough, depending on how Germany get on against Costa Rica. It does feel like there's a moment here where the big opportunity for Japan hasn't completely gone, but the door is slammed about half shut.
Yeah, I have to agree. I mean, although looking at this tournament, you know, you can never say never.
Anyone
I know
off.
that is cliche. You can't write anyone off. But I mean, if there was a chance to go through and to, you know, to really make a statement, you know, today was the day. And obviously, they will go into that game against Spain with slight trepidation. But what I would say as well is that I guess the Germany game compared to today was a different dynamic. You know, they were going into the Germany game as underdogs. They knew that Germany would come on to them and then they would then hit them with a counter. Whereas today was all about Japan, how or when or, you know, if they could break Costa Rica down. And that change of dynamic does change the kind of, you know, mentality within the team and within the squad as well. And I guess they're going to the Spain game with a similar kind of backdrop as the underdogs. But yeah, it would be a tall ask, because Spain, as we've seen, you know, they've got the quality to break anyone down. And yeah, I guess that they will be kicking themselves as a result of that.
Yeah, I do fear for Costa Rica a little bit, because if Japan were to beat Spain, which is plausible considering what we've seen so far, Germany beating Costa Rica would need them to beat them by 8 in order to overturn Spain's goal difference so far. That would be a lot. And I can see Germany going out with that intent to be like, right, we've got to cover the bases. Because if Japan and Spain draw, we're in trouble. If we beat Costa Rica here and we have to absolutely hammer them, if Japan get that win, I do worry a little bit for Costa Rica and their goal difference off the back of what's gone on today. That win might have been the worst thing they could have ever done in actually trying to sort themselves out.
But they were under a bit of pressure today, weren't they? Because of some tabloid stories about, you know, pictures of the players with wags. I don't know if you saw that. And they were asked about it in the press conference. And so they developed like a siege mentality before the game. So, you know, I mean,
maybe that's what helped.
In one respect, you know, the result has taken some of the pressure off, I think.
Yes, well, they've got their 3 points on the board. They are no longer in danger of becoming the worst World Cup side in history. So they've got that to take home with them. That's a spoon you can take with you.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Let's move on to the other group that we saw today, Group F. And let's start with Belgium against Morocco. 2-0 to Morocco here. And let's be frank, you know, I've said this on a couple of things. Sometimes you look at results and go, that's a bit of a shock result. Is that how the game played out? Or is that one of those where you look at it and you go, that's how it deserved to be? This is how it deserved to be. Morocco with a better side for so much of this game against Belgium for so much of this game. It does kind of feel like one of those results you're looking at and going, wow, that's a moment in the changing of the guard. That's a real, you know, and Belgium can still get out of this group, sure, if they beat Croatia. However this pans out, this is the end of this Belgium golden generation, and we're seeing the decline of some players in a really, really tough way to watch on such a big stage, Rich.
Yeah, I don't even remember. I think during the preview show I mentioned Belgium as being one of those sides who could disappoint, and even if they do go through, I think you're absolutely right there in terms of a changing of a guard, a changing of an era, because I think it's very clear to see that there are a number of players in that squad who have come to the end of the road, especially in an international setting anyway. And today was just that final nail in the coffin. As you say, they might, even if they come and, you know, they win the next game and they go through and they do well in the tournament, I think, you know, there will need to be changes within that setup, bringing a new generation, perhaps even a new manager as well, and just freshen things up, because what we saw today was just a very stale outfit, a very stale unit who were just so used to going through the motions together. There was no injection, there was no excitement, there was no pressing, there was minimal quality. And as you rightly say, Morocco were full value for the victory today.
Yeah, it was delightful to see, to be honest. Morocco are one of those sides that I've got really invested in out of kind of nowhere. And just because everyone else was kind of going, I think they'll come bottom of the group. And I was like, they're going to win the group. And, you know, I've made a load of terrible calls ahead of the World Cup. So it's nice to see one of them coming to at least some sort of fruition. But it's a really good side, Peter, this Morocco side. And there's kind of quality all over the pitch. Yes, there's probably a little bit less quality when you're looking at the depth of the squad. And yet it was two substitutes that have come off the bench today who have scored the two goals, made the difference. And when you kind of look at that for what this group means and for the fans that were there today, because it felt like a Morocco home game. And that's a major thing. You know, you're seeing people succeed in front of their own fans. And we saw it obviously with the Saudi Arabia game against Argentina. The scenes in the stadium afterwards were absolutely amazing. We saw it again today for Morocco. I think all of this stuff matters because it's what gives a tournament that kind of edge when you're seeing fans who have travelled in great numbers, and there haven't been maybe the usual fan bases we'd expect this of. When you are seeing, you know, these North African nations travel in such great numbers, it's lovely to see them get the results on the board that they deserve and that they've earned on the pitch as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's those moments, you look for moments, particularly if you're a team that's probably not going to win the tournament, but you want those moments that you can take back and have a tangible impact on football in your country. And it's results like Saudi Arabia defeating Argentina in front of, as you say, thousands of Saudi Arabian fans. And then similarly here with a packed out stadium, extraordinarily loud national anthem, you know, the Atlas Mountains creaking from afar. It was, it was really quite a special game for Moroccan football, I would say. And not just because of the result, but because of the way they played, because they showed the quality that they have. A really good, especially in that first 11. And as you say, the subs came on and had an impact too, and a major impact as well. But when you have those quality of players that, you know, younger players are looking up to when you're coming through and can build your game on or get invested in through the occasion because you remember those moments, you know, it's really important. And that's that, and it especially so with so many supporters there when that otherwise may not have been the case. I think this is a really high quality Morocco team with a clear identity, with some very talented players used effectively. How important it's been to bring people back like Ziyech to have some harmony after, you know, the disruption. Obviously, Ziyech fell out with Halihodžić. That's right, isn't it? The previous Morocco manager. And it makes a difference when you can put all of your best players on the pitch and they're all playing and singing on the same hymn sheet. And we saw that with some clever goals, some technically smart players. I thought Boufal had a really good game as well, former Southampton player. And they were just more energetic. They had more about them. They were more dynamic than Belgium. And it was a really sharp contrast because you would still say, despite the fact that, you know, this is an aging golden generation, they've probably fluffed their chance. And I wonder how much that plays on your mind. And maybe there's something to say for having a managerial change, just so you don't have those memories of, ah, damn, when we were really strong, we should have won that tournament or not lost in the semifinals, those kind of things. But that was a really sharp contrast on the day, not just in terms of performance, but the way the two teams played, the energy they had. I agree that they will cause problems for any team. I think we saw with how Croatia played against Canada, which we'll come on to, how classy Croatia are still, the quality that they have. And while they may have drawn that opening game, Morocco, they did so against a very strong side. And in knockout football, anything can happen. So, yeah, I suppose the result today was not a surprise because we know the trends of the two teams. But going forward, I think they can cause some bigger shocks.
Yeah, I mean, Rich, I wanted to come on to the goal and maybe the non-goal as well. Obviously, Morocco had a goal ruled out for offside in the first half that was a direct free kick from that right-hand side, Ziyech whipping it in with his left foot. And then they score their first goal from the other side, where Sabiri does exactly the same with his right foot. And Saïss is in the same position. He just happens to be onside this time. It does feel like, you know, when you're looking at a player of Thibaut Courtois' quality, and we've seen how good he's been in the Champions League, in La Liga over the last couple of years. He feels like a player right at the peak of his powers. And I wonder, you know, he's looking at the rest of his team going, what's going on here? He's like, I've got Kevin up there. And then apart from that, there really isn't much for me to cling on to. And then he's fluffed at two kind of things that you would expect him to save. Yeah, yes, okay, we can give him the benefit of the doubt on the first one where there's a player interfering with his line of vision. But the second one is poor. And I wonder how much, you know, the kind of group mentality is starting to just drag this down, because that's not what you expect to see from Thibaut Courtois. And it's also the kind of thing where we started to hear these stories, Kevin De Bruyne saying, I don't think we're going to win this, we're too old. Hazard saying, I don't think we can get past the semi-finals, maybe our chance has gone. It all feels a bit weird.
Yeah, the harmony does seem a bit strange. And it's funny you mentioned those quotes, because I guess Vertonghen came out and said, we'll be too old, or did that age make us really poor in attack today? So it's a bit tongue in cheek.
That's gone well, I imagine.
Yeah, so
well done, Jan.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, you can see kind of what's going on there. But yeah, I mean, you look at Courtois with the goal, as you mentioned, and of course, okay, you might look at him and say, okay, you might, you know, Dan Belader command 6 yard box, etc. But I mean, it was pretty much a carbon copy of the goal that was disallowed. So you are looking at the defence as to say, okay, we can see this is a tactic where they're going to try and run across you and try and get in that near post and fling balls into that area. So are we going to protect the goalkeeper or are we not? And obviously they've backed Courtois there, but it seemed like it was an issue for the first goal. So you'd have to think, okay, they're going to try and, you know, rectify that for the second opportunity. And they just didn't. They just let Saïss go in there. I mean, Saïss, I mean, wow. I mean, I don't think he's ever been that far up the pitch ever, so it was great to see him
getting a nosebleed.
Yeah, I don't want to say it, but obviously credit to him. But you're looking at the defence and saying, okay, you know, we're let off the hook, you know, in the first half. Don't let it happen again, especially experienced players like Vertonghen back there at the back. But I guess you look at the second goal, and it was a goal of real quality. I mean, you know, as Pete said, you know, Ziyech getting involved, and it was a fantastic finish in that near post. Goalkeeper had no chance there, but. Yeah, I mean, you're looking at a side there who, I guess at that point, just looked demoralised, the heads were down, the body language was really poor. And again, you know, as you say, Morocco, you know, could have got more after that as well. So I mean, it was great. It was great to see from their perspective, but yeah, from Belgium perspective, it was just really poor all around.
Yeah, I'd agree. And Peter, I was going to come on to this kind of refresh point. And maybe the one that kind of made it stick out to me like a sore thumb was the fact that Dries Mertens was brought on before Leandro Trossard, right? And I love Dries Mertens, and I don't want this to sound like negativity towards him, because he's had a wonderful career, and I loved what he did in Naples at Napoli. And I just think he's a great player and a great player to have around. But if I'm Leandro Trossard, having the season that I'm having, and I'm like, this team really needs a spark and someone to inject some life into it, and the manager's gone, Dries, 35 years old, get on here, we want you in next. And I'm sitting there going, hang on. Like, I'm looking there kind of wide-eyed thinking, when's my opportunity going to come? And that's what makes me kind of think that maybe we're just seeing the end of this kind of generation's as time. You know, Roberto Martinez has turned to his tried and trusted. It hasn't worked for him. And only then later on, you know, 75th minute, is he turned to Catalara, who appreciate isn't having a great season at Milan in their opening season, but to Trossard as well. And at that point, you're going, maybe it is time to just renew this entire setup. And I wonder how many of this generation might just retire from international football once this tournament is done.
Yeah, I think it feels that way. You look at the team. I mean, it's this narrative about age and, you know, needing to refresh, and has clearly seeped into the group itself.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's kind of extraordinary in a way. And it shouldn't be the case, because there are still some very high quality players in there. You've got Kevin De Bruyne at his peak, pretty much. This is the point. They're still not taking advantage of the talent that they have. I mean, for me, as much as it's to do with aging forwards and whatever, it's the back line for me. I feel like the stodginess started with their build-up. Vertonghen and Alderweireld have been fantastic servants, and they can still do a job, but that needs refreshing. That needs some energy. That needs some impetus. Witsel just seems to be having poor games. And the point about bringing Mertens on, I it's almost as though Roberto Martinez is thinking of the mindset of 4 years ago and the team he had 4 years ago, and is making decisions based on that. Because there are still players coming through. There's quality. There's Wout Faes, who's just joined Leicester. There's, you know, Leandro Trossard, as you say. And Di Castello is not having a good season, but there is quality.
There are players, yeah.
And Belgium have a squad that is strong enough to compete and should be competing if it's used correctly and believes it can compete. I do feel like, and even if you're in that group, and the fact that it has set in suggests that refresh is needed, just so that they all have a different mentality, so that they can all buy into a new project, a new focus, a new idea, rather than clinging on to those shadows of previous failures.
Yeah, I'd agree. I would agree. Just before we move on to Croatia, Canada, Rich, how far can Morocco go? And I think this is one of those questions where we haven't seen them concede a goal under their new manager, Walid Regragui. You know, this is what, his seventh, eighth game in charge of them. They haven't conceded yet. And they've played some pretty decent opposition in that time. You know, we saw what Croatia did today to Canada. This is a Belgium side we've seen cause problems for people, even if they're not the side that they once were. There's plenty of attacking talent. There are moments of magic within this side. They're a kind of team that I'm like, if I'm one of the big guns, I'm like, the last team in the world I want to draw right now is Morocco.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth there, because sometimes, you know, if you are one of the big guns, you kind of want to face a side of a similar stature. I mean, obviously, you know, looking at threats, but you know you're at least going to get some joy in behind, because they're going to come onto you as well, and then you can also hit them with a counter-attack with your transitions. Whereas with Morocco, they are so strong, so resolute, so organised defensively. You know, they will be horrible to play against, especially as you know that all the pressure is going to be on you as well to break them down. And yeah, the longer the game goes on, you know, the more their towers are going to be up, the confidence is going to be up. And as we've seen, they only need a chance to capitalize. You know, look, I think, you know, if they can get out of the group, no reason why they can't win their last 16 game. And, you know, it would be magical if they got to the quarterfinals. I mean, it'd be difficult. I mean, I can't see it. I think last 16 probably would be the furthest that they would go. But even still, it's a fantastic achievement. But again, tournament football, anything can happen. You just need to win 1-0. Just get through the game.
Just keep going.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they're doing that now, you know, especially when it gets to knockout football. All you need is to just remain resolute and then, you know, get a goal on a counter-attack or from a set piece, which they've done twice today. So, you know, anything can happen. I think, you know, if they reach last 16, amazing. I think that will be as far as I'll go. But I mean, if they do progress, it'll be magical. It'll be something that I'd love to see.
Yeah, I mean, look, because if they beat Canada, they probably win this group. And if they win this group, then they'll get the second place in Group E, which might well be Germany. And the way that Germany are playing, I can see Morocco beating them. So it really is one of those. Let's come on to Croatia, Canada, though. 4-1. Varna said that this was the best game today in the comments. I think it's a fair shout in terms of most entertaining. It was a really, really good encounter. The way that it swung from one side to the other. Canada have been a delight in so many different ways in this World Cup. Now, obviously, they've suffered two losses. They're out of the tournament. But in general, I think when people were looking at this Canada side, who hadn't seen much of them, they probably weren't expecting much. And they've brought the game to both Belgium and Croatia. Today, I think they were a little bit outclassed. I think they're incredibly unlucky not to beat Belgium here. But they've brought a whole lot of energy, but also of real finesse to this tournament as well.
Absolutely. Energy, excitement, entertainment, punching above their weight to an extent as well. And, you know, as you say, the moment was Belgium. That was the moment, wasn't it, to get that win, that win and really set the cat among the pigeons a little bit more. And they were unlucky. They didn't take the chances when they came, and Belgium somehow scraped through that despite their identity crisis at the moment that they seem to have. But, you know, I think today we saw the best of Canada. We saw that first goal, which is so important. It's, you know, we were talking about moments before for Morocco and Saudi Arabia. The same thing applies to Canada, I think.
Yeah.
A really fantastic goal. I'm glad it was on Alphonso Davies as well. You know, it's difficult when you are the star of the team. Obviously, there's Jonathan David as well. And there is quality across the board. But to Davies, you know, you are the world-class talent, aren't you? So
he's the poster boy.
He is. He's the guy everyone turns to. And when you deliver, it's a lift for everybody. And it's certainly a great moment for him to have that label of getting the first goal for Canada at the World Cup. So on the day, I think Croatia's quality really, really showed. They're a really classy team. They haven't lost any of that in the last 4 years. I know time turns, but, you know, maybe Belgium can learn a thing or two from them about
that. There's been a little bit of refresh in the Croatia squad, which feels like hasn't happened at all in the Belgium squad. But alas, go on.
And I think that's what did for them today. Again, just try to take those chances, and maybe it's a different story again. But I mean, Mateo Kovacic today was absolutely phenomenal. I think there may be, I know a lot's been made of Herdman's comments before the game that followed the Belgian one, and I know it was tongue in cheek, but you just don't annoy a country from the Balkans, I think. And ultimately, that has hindered. I genuinely think they have, because Croatia would have taken that. They would have used it as siege mentality. They would have taken it very seriously. And they've put in a first-class performance, raised their game, really, from the Morocco performance. And maybe that was the jolt that they needed. So maybe an element of naivety there. And I know it seems silly, and I know it seems, oh, she's just joking, but that's how sports teams can work, because it can switch a mindset within a team. So
yeah,
it's unfortunate, but we saw Croatia at their best today, and it's a tough challenge.
Yeah, I mean, Rich, in the comments from Varne, he says, you know, the midfield three, Modric, Brozovic, Kovacic, killed them. I thought Kovacic was absolutely sensational, you know, across the board in this one. He was just a real hell of a player in so many ways. But he did all of the hard yards as well as anything else, you know, as well as those twists and turns of midfield that we've seen, as well as those killer passes. He was back in his own box defending. And look, it did feel in some ways, I think saying it was Alphonso Davies versus Croatia was a bit harsh. I thought Tejan Buchanan was absolutely sensational as well. But I can kind of see what Varna's getting at. The midfield three was the difference here. And they kind of passed Canada to death in the end.
This is the quality that they've got. This is what they can do. You know, they can turn it on at any time. You know, England probably know that better than most. Look at the last World Cup. So, you look at kind of England's squad, you know, compared to Canada's today, and you know that there is that golfing class. And when they do get given time on the ball to assert themselves in the game, to start controlling the game, controlling the ball with the passing, their movement, and just orchestrating play. You know, there were times where Canada couldn't get near, especially the likes of Modric, the likes of Kovacic, the way he drives with the ball. You know, you can't get the ball off them. And you've got Brozovic there just mopping things up, and, you know, playing one touch, two touch. You know, from a kind of a neutral perspective is a joy to watch. You know, when you look, you know, if you're a young player, you want to learn the game, and you know, you think, you know, who are the players I'm going to look up to? You know, those three players should be near the top of your list, because the way they receive the ball under pressure, the way they pop it around the corners, the way they play through balls, the way they intercept balls when the opposition have it, you know, it was a real masterclass from them today. And you know, as Pete said, you know, something that, you know, Belgium side can possibly have a look at, because when you're looking at their senior players stepping up and, you know, taking control of games, you've got the likes of the three Croatians there who have done that on a number of occasions. And, you know, I guess from a Belgian perspective, you're looking for their senior players to do the same there. So no, it was a fantastic watch. It was a fantastic, as you say, a real masterclass performance of a midfield three. And a shame for Canada, you know, obviously they scored early. And when I talk about dynamics in games and stuff, you know, I spoke earlier about Japan and how their dynamic was them kind of having to chase the game now. And it was the same for Canada, really. I think we liked looking at them kind of, you know, playing in a counter-attack and having to, you know, playing their transitions and using their pace to out wide to cause problems. But it's a different dynamic when you are having to chase a game and assert yourselves. And although they did well, again, to say the quality of Croatia just picked them off. You know, it was like you're looking at two boxers, one quality boxer, one mid boxer, and they're just getting picked off with shots. And at the end of the day, say they conceded four. But no, Canada was still equipped themselves well. It's not like it was a failure or a poor performance from them. They just lost to a far superior side.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And obviously the big one for Canada is going to come in 4 years. This is cracking experience in mm-hmm. terms of getting that in the tank and being ready. And so much of this squad is so young that they're going to be, you know, in a far better place for having had this experience 100%. In 4 years' time at a home World Cup. So from that perspective, I think everything has been a success in a Canadian way. Just one word more on Croatia, Peter. Kramaric played off the right-hand side, which is not his natural position. He is normally a striker, but was excellent there, I thought, and really did give that attack a dynamic that we hadn't seen before. Obviously, it was Vlasic in the first game. I didn't think he was great, to be perfectly honest with you, against Morocco. And now, obviously, it was a tighter game than this. But when you look at Kramaric in that role, playing off a striker of Levia's mould, I really enjoy what he brings to the table if they're going to play like this, because obviously Perisic will go kind of long and wide on the other side. Jovanovic is going to want to get down that right-hand flank from right back. It puts him in a really nice position to take advantage, and he had a very cool head for two goals today.
Yeah, they missed that focal point, didn't they, against Morocco? They missed that sort of that just cutting edge. And you're right. I mean, it's not Kramaric's natural position, but we saw his quality, and it's got him among the goals. Which is really, really important. Particularly liked, I think it was his second goal. I think it was the second goal where he takes that first touch off the Perisic pass. That's real class. That's real quality. And that's where that team can step up again. You know, they've seen the thing they lacked in the opening game. And, you know, when you've got service from, you know, you talked about the fullbacks there, but also you've got Perisic on that side, who just continuously performs at this very high level so consistently. It's a real, real attribute, and with the midfield engine they have, as we talked about, there will be opportunities, and you just need someone to take them. And you're right, I like that balance. I like the balance that they struck with Kramaric coming off from the right, and that's what you need your centre forwards to get in amongst the goals. You know, Levia also scored today, so that's all very encouraging for them going forward. And it'd be interesting to see how far they actually go in the tournament, because I fully expect them to come through the group now. I mean, the contrast between them and Belgium coming into that final game is pretty strong. It's the World Cup. Anything could happen. Maybe there'll be some kind of disaster. Who knows? But you just...
On the balance of form and play, you'd imagine that play, Croatia relatively ease their way through that game against Belgium, to be perfectly honest with you.
Comfortably, you know, and they've got some good young players coming through that they're slowly building in. Getting that experience, building that time, and that will make a big difference going forward as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. With that, I think it's probably time for us to call it a day here, boys.
One quick question for you, Jack. Let's see if you've been doing your homework. Right. So Davies's goal mm-hmm. is the fastest goal in the group stage of a match at the World Cup since which goal?
What, is it in this World Cup?
No. At a World Cup.
Oh, at a World
seconds.
Cup.
Yeah.
Oh,
Come on.
Oh, wow. Just put you in the spot there.
Oh, he's killed me. Wow. As well. I am absolutely not a Scooby-Doo.
Come on. Put your Fulham hat on, mate.
I'm not a Fulham hat on.
Come on.
Ah, I think I've got it.
Is it Dempsey?
It's Dempsey. It's Dempsey. Yes, it is. 29 well seconds against Ghana in 2014.
There we
well
go.
Well done, you got there. You got there.
Just got there. Especially on it, you know, especially on a soccer show. I should be getting a Fulham American is someone who I should be getting nailed on first time every time. So, glad to hear it. Glad to hear it just about right. Thank you, Peter. I really did need that on the spot quiz at this point. Here we are. All that's left for me to do is say thank you so much to everyone for tuning in and for your comments as well. Thank you so much to Mr. Rich Amofa.
No, thanks for having me. It's been real. It's been fun.
It's been lots of fun. You'll be back very soon. Thank you very much to Mr. Peter Rutzler.
That's all right, Jack. I've just realised you're going to get me back now, so maybe I shouldn't have done that.
questions galore for you next time. I've been Jack Collins. This has been the Athletic Soccer Shares World Cup post-game, and we will see you very shortly. Take it easy.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.